Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 183, featuring our good friends from Squint Opera. This is from your side of the world, isn't it, Melissa?
Yeah.
Yeah, these guys are really cool. We met them at Total Chaos. I've actually met them before, but they were speakers at Total Chaos. That's right.
That seems forever ago now.
God, when was that? May?
Yes.
Yeah, so it was a while, but yeah, I've been hoarding some of these talks we had there.
That's right. You got a bounty of podcast recordings.
Yeah, I think I've got one more after this one, but they were really great. What I find interesting about Squint Opera is that, I guess technically people would call them an archivist company, but they're not. I would call them a communication company. They have a special way of making stories about an architecture project, for example, that communicates the idea in a very interesting way. So they did a project for the Dryline project project in New York, and a video was really cool, sort of explaining why it's there, what it's doing. And what's really cool is they also work with some really big name people like Bjork Engel Group, also known as Big Architect. Communicating those ideas in a video format is a really cool thing. And they also did one on the Hyperloop that they're doing for a proposal that's in Dubai. So that was a really cool project. But highly recommend looking at their work. Very interesting podcast. I really enjoyed having them on, and I've wanted to have them on for a while. And so the people who spoke for us is Camille, Michelle, and Zlatina. Zlatina is, I believe, a native Bulgarian. And she was. They were all really great at telling us a little bit behind that, what Squint Opera is all about and how they work. And really good customers and really good friends. But we've got a couple of announcements, and this is one of the big reasons you're here, Melissa. This has been your baby. You've been cooking this thing for a while.
Yeah, I think that's why Total Chaos seems so long ago, is because I've been so focused on Seagraph the last probably 6 weeks or so.
Yeah.
It's taken a while to come together, but this lineup, guys, is going to be one of the best we've ever had. Actually, I can go out on a limb here and say it is the best we've ever
had. It's very, very good.
Yeah, yep. It is. It's amazing. I'm so pleased that we managed to get such big names involved this year.
All right, so run us through it.
We've got smaller names as well, of course, and they've got some fantastic projects too. So I've printed out the schedule, and it's tiny print, so I'm holding it very close to my face to see it. But let me tell you about some of the talks. So it's over 2 days during Seagraph in Vancouver this year.
Mm-hmm. What are the days?
It's Tuesday the 14th and Wednesday the 15th of August.
Okay, perfect.
And just to let people know, we're going to be in the East Building of the Vancouver Convention Center.
Okay.
Seagraph's got so big, they're actually spreading out a lot more this year. So the main exhibit hall's in the West Building, but V-Ray Days, where you want to spend most of your time, is over in the East Building.
Now, is this on the actual Seagraph schedule too?
Well, it should be. I've sent it to them.
Okay, good.
But I'm sure they've got a lot to organize, so it will be on the app anyway, the official Seagraph app, all of our details.
Which is what most people will be doing anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's the best way to access it. So let me tell you what we've got on the schedule.
Yeah.
On Tuesday, we kick things off with the Educator's Breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
So this has traditionally been focused towards people that are teaching V-Ray.
Mm-hmm.
But the education team coming over from Sofia this year are kind of broadening this, and it's a breakfast, so bonus, you do get some muffins.
Mm-hmm.
And it's open to anyone that uses V-Ray, basically, because they'll be talking about education resources from us, and also for educators if they are teaching V-Ray. So it's professors, students, and practitioners as well. So everyone's welcome to that. Hopefully we don't run out of muffins now I've broadcast that. and then moving onwards, we've got the rest of the talks that day. We've got Ian Spriggs, our good friend who's the digital character artist.
Yeah, he's amazing.
He is. And he did a great job at Total Chaos. And he's got a revised version of his talk he did there, actually, Behind the Portrait. So some fascinating work in digital humans and his artistry for creating those amazing portraits. Then we have Method Studios, and they've helped me out so much. We've had to have a specially extended slot for them because they're talking about not one, not two, but three blockbusters.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Avengers, Infinity War, Black Panther, and Deadpool 2. So
that's ridiculous.
I know. That's like a day's lineup right there, right, all in right. one session.
But this is going to be 1 hour.
It's going to be almost 2 hours, actually.
Oh, good.
So the guys there are helping us out from the Vancouver office, and they've got lots of behind-the-scenes VFX breakdowns to show you that are exclusive. No one's seen those yet.
Awesome.
And then we've got Fuse Effects, and they're talking about their work on Lost in Space, the Netflix series.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's really cool.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it looked stunning.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got Aaron Sims Creative, and their talk's going to be very interesting. They're looking at character design and VFX for the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
So their work on Rampage and Ready Player One, which I watched again the other night. I love that film. And also, I can't see much about this right now, but there's an exclusive peek into this amazing immersive theater experience.
Yeah, I know. I've seen it. Justin Denton, we can mention him, right?
Yes, he's coming.
Justin Denton is coming specifically
for
this.
Yep.
Who is the director of this? And he's actually been on the podcast before. And he is one of the people I would say that gets VR better than anyone and including skeptics would have to agree with Justin in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
He really gets VR and he's embraced himself in that world, and it's really good. So if you really want to see something that's breaking the bounds of VR experiences, you should come to Justin's talk.
That's gonna be a good
talk. Yeah. And he's working with the Aaron Sims guys, who are great. So
that's Tuesday.
Okay. Yeah.
And then moving on, Wednesday, we start off with Real Time UK.
Oh, nice.
Our friends from there did a great talk at FMX this year, and it's a kind of abridged version of that.
Mm-hmm.
Cinematic Worlds, a holistic view of creating game trailers. So that's going to be really good. And there's some very good new projects that will be exclusively revealed in that.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Digital Domain next, and they're showing their stunning work on Avengers Infinity War. Because Thanos.
Yeah, Thanos.
Right? Okay, so
the only problem is only half of the people will be left in the theater once they're done.
So the work on that was absolutely stunning, because we all saw the trailer. We knew it was a hard task to have the lead character from an Avengers film be a CG character, right?
A major CG character.
Yeah, and they did it. They completely held up and rendered in V-Ray. So we're thrilled to have these guys demonstrate their work on that.
Absolutely.
Then we have VIP from Sofia, Vlado, in the house.
Nice.
He's doing his Vlado in Renderland talk.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we've got some exclusive product demos. I cannot say
enough how you have to come to this talk.
This talk's always really busy.
And you really have to come, because I can't say anything. And the only place you're going to hear about is that to go to the talk. So go to that talk.
Yes.
What time is it?
That one's at 2 o'clock on Wednesday.
2 o'clock on Wednesday. Be there.
Yep. Then ILM, you know, those guys.
Yeah.
If anyone's interested, they'll be showing off large natural environments. So that kind of sounds interesting, but even more interesting, we know it's for Jurassic Park: Fallen Kingdom.
Jurassic World.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, I do. So just the thing that just came out.
Yes.
That's awesome.
I've already seen.
I know.
I should know better. That's just the title, right? And The Wrinkle in Time film as well. So they'll be showing some fantastic work on that.
Awesome, awesome.
And then finishing things off, we have Scanline.
And they
are going to be showing off their work on Black Panther, that epic waterfall battle scene.
Right.
Wakanda Falls.
Yeah.
And that finishes off the day. Oh, actually, I should update my printout because we do have another slot that's just been added.
Yes.
And it's the Corona guys.
Of course.
Because they're part of the family.
Yes. I was going to ask you, where are the Corona guys? Right.
And they're going to be doing a talk at the end of the Wednesday presentations, which is a kind of Corona retrospective. It's about the render of past, present, and future. And Andra is actually presenting that, the main developer. So he'll be giving a kind of final talk at the end of the day on Wednesday, because we could pack one more in.
I love Andre's really fun too. He's very charismatic and very dry humor, which I really like.
We're thrilled to have them involved.
Really cool guys, and I'm glad we're able to talk about the Corona stuff. At some point, we're going to have to figure out how to rename V-Ray Days to just something that includes
Total everyone. Chaos.
We could just call it Total Chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
On the road.
On the road. Yeah, it was really, really good. Good job. Well, first of all, I think all of our listeners and all of the people who are going to come here should thank you for this incredible lineup, Melissa.
Chris,
you did such a good job.
Thank you.
And this
I was
is
so excited to launch the webpage this week.
Yeah.
Which I should tell everyone about.
Right.
chaosgroup.com/seagraph2018.
Yeah.
You can find information about all the talks I've just mentioned.
Yes.
With the correct titles.
Yeah.
And also a button where you can register, you can complete your details. It's actually open to all. The talks are free. You don't even have to have a Seagraph badge to come.
Yeah, you can
them.
Just come.
Yes.
But we do ask if you could register, please.
Yeah.
So we know if you're interested in which talks and it can help us plan for some of that.
Exactly.
That'd be great.
And there's also some information on the website about some other talks we're doing outside of V-Ray Days.
Mm-hmm.
The Corona guys are there. They're doing a couple of presentations. Same with Vlado.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some product demos on the HP stand and mm-hmm. also Foundry booth. So yeah, it's an action-packed schedule for
yep.
us this year.
It's going to be really great.
And also there's about 25 people coming over from Sofia this year.
Yes, there is.
So we're en masse going to take over Seagraph.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Melissa. This has
My
been,
pleasure.
This has been great. And we, it's been a bit of a long intro, but I think
yes,
everyone is
going
to, people need to know about what's going on at Seagraph because we've been sort of teasing it for a while. So I'm happy we're able to do that. But that being said, please enjoy this fantastic podcast that we did with our friends from Squint Opera that we recorded over at Total Chaos. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passé. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
I've been aware of Squint Opera's work for a while, and I think you guys are doing a very different approach to telling a story about design in some way. What can you tell me about your what was the philosophy behind that, and how you guys what were the inspirations that you guys used for that?
Yeah, sure. I think that's a question for Michelle.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
She covered that in the talk we just had.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, here's the problem. Because I'm doing these podcasts, I don't have an opportunity to actually go to the talks.
Yeah.
And I also get to be able to transfer that information to people who weren't here as well. So
yeah. So what was interesting, the three founders of Squint Opera, they studied architecture at the Bartlett
In
London, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when they started Squint Opera, it was to make documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually just wanted to make films.
Mm-hmm.
And they started making films for architecture and design. But they came from the angle of storytelling rather than CGI.
Mm-hmm.
So often the CGI was really basic and...
Not to say crap.
No, but it really wasn't the focus. There was sort of very low-tech and lo-fi, and it was all about the stories.
Yeah.
Also, a big part of the films in the beginning was taken by motion graphics. So actually the architectural side of it, the visualization, came a bit later.
Okay.
And at the beginning it was, the whole focus of these films was to tell the story, how these projects affect people's lives, how they're perceived, what is the impact. And the visual side of it was just aiding the storytelling rather than the other way around.
Okay.
And we try to keep this as much as possible even now in our projects, but it's hard sometimes.
Well, absolutely.
We have to kind of fight the client, not fight, but try to convince him every time that storytelling might be the best approach for that. But now I think we built some kind of reputation where clients kind of call us for that, for the storytelling and for the narrative.
Right.
You're hardly ever called now to do a fly-through. Hardly.
Yeah.
Right, because I think that's the point, right? You guys have come up with a message or a way that you guys are doing things. And I've always been, when I was in architecture school, I was always about the narrative. I thought that the narrative of architecture is very interesting. And one of the things I find very interesting about it, and that architects are somewhat reluctant to give a narrative in an animation, but every day when they present their architecture, they're giving a narrative about that architecture. And that's part of the process of designing, is explaining, you know, how the design will affect your life or what it's going to do. What I do find interesting is that architects tend to tell narrative in a non-linear way, because you can experience that architecture in so many different ways. It's not necessarily a linear process. But filmmaking is a linear narrative in a lot of ways. And that doesn't necessarily mean that one is better than the other, but putting a linear narrative or putting a linear story into the process gives it a much more of a specific logic. Do you find that that's true in the way that you guys describe, you know, the stories that you're doing in Esquin Opera?
I think with architecture, there are a few different stories. So architects have their own story of how they came up with the design, how they came up with the shape and the function and the site of the building and all of this. But then there's also the story, like Ina was saying, about the people who are going to experience the building and maybe the history of the site. Or it might be a story of someone discovering this architecture for the first time that's here, or the story of a person who's just moved there and their family and progression. So I think that sometimes there are, like, you can sort of pick the angle of which story to tell. So it also maybe depends a little on who's watching the film. So if the film is, let's say, a competition for an architecture project, this is for someone who's got to approve the design. It's different to marketing for the kind of person who might want to buy a house in that master plan, for example. So you get to tell a different story.
Right. But go ahead.
I just wanted to add that oftentimes we approach with very vague ideas on what we need to show. And at the same time, very specific things. It's contradictory, but there is a package of properties that we need to show that apply to this project. Let's say it's spacious, it's green, it's located there, and it's going to do this and this to the neighborhood. But in terms of the story, oftentimes we have a lot of freedom to design our own story and to pick the angle from which we are going to tell that story. And this gives us a lot of freedom and creative ability to design not only the story itself, but also the look and the feel, the actual approach to the film that we are going to make. And this is part of the work that we enjoy the most, I think.
It's just discovering the story, right?
Yeah. And also designing the product, the film, or the stills, or whatever we are producing to fit within our own creative goals, let's say.
Yeah, because, you know, it's interesting. If you look at filmmaking process, right, you actually, you know, start with an idea, an outline, and then you write a script, and you do this, and you do that. But you're approaching someone who may not necessarily have any knowledge of that, right? And you're creating a story out of what they don't know how to tell the story, right? And you have to find a way to somehow tell that narrative and turn it into a script and turn it into a series of stills and concept art and all that other stuff, right?
Yeah, that's very true. Usually the client, like Ina mentioned, they have some key points they want to flag in the movie,
right?
Like the location, that we can call that check boxes.
Right.
And the story is just like the strings that's going to connect all those check boxes. But you can have many stories as long as all the check boxes are ticked. Then feel free to experiment with any story.
Okay. Can we try to find some good examples? I'm sure you had some great ones in your presentation of that approach, like how do you approach the client and what was the story that was told and how that transformed into what you're doing. And by the way, if there's any of those, what would be perfect is if we could link to one of the videos, and we'll put it in the show notes as well. So think about what would be a good one.
Well, I mean, one of the ones that we just showed was the Spiral Building, which is a skyscraper in Manhattan, and it was designed by big architects. And they came to us already with a storyboard, and they wanted Bjarke himself to be in the forefront of the film describing the project. And he's done this in a few different films.
He has.
So it's a little bit like a branding tool as well. So this is how he like him explaining his designs.
Right.
And so we had to work, I guess, around that or with that. So...
But this wasn't the first time you'd done that, right?
No, yeah, and we did a film. We did a film or two, a couple of films.
You did several films with him, and he's always sort of been this.
Yeah, like Michelle was saying, it's kind of like his trademark when it comes to our collaboration and you know the films that we do for them. Usually, it involves some sort of live action filming in situ of Bjarke, the man himself.
I think that's such a great way of looking at it. Now, you know, some people may say, oh, he's, you know, a lot of architects have a lot of ego sometimes and they wanted to make themselves part of the...
Starkitects.
Starkitects, right? But he is a Starkitect. He is a very famous and successful architect because he tells a really good story, right?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I think that's his whole point. He managed to properly explain it to the public.
Right.
And if you have the whole public backing you, then you have... more chance that your project is actually going to be built.
Right.
Also, it's a way to connect the brain to... he places himself inside the project, inside this film, inside this story.
Right.
So it's a way to connect with people, and it's a way to connect these three areas and make it all more like fluid and natural. It's not just someone projecting ideas... over the society or
do you think it helps give it scale?
Of course. Yeah.
It helps give it some like relatability as well, because I think he talks about this, just what his company's about, the idea that we can make buildings that suit everyone's needs. Mm-hmm. And because he's quite a young architect that did many projects quite early on, people can sort of relate a little bit to, oh, wow, yeah, he's making something that can be used by me, you know. Mm-hmm. So rather than like a fictional character, it's a bit more relatable because he's an actual person telling his actual designs.
Right.
Does sometimes tend to feel more relatable in that way.
Right.
In one way. Like.
And he doesn't, you know, you use the term Starkitect, and in a lot of sense, I don't sense him... I sense him being relatable, right? I mean, it's like the way that you guys are filming. I don't know if it's, I've never met him in person. I would love to. Maybe you can introduce me. But I feel that he comes off as very relatable. It's just like you said, right? So it's a very, and that makes the story feel like approachable, like you can ask him things or even though he's, you know, behind the screen.
Yeah, he's oftentimes involved. As I said, it's a collaboration process. Mm-hmm. It's not... just us coming up with ideas. It's also him or other clients just being involved in the process, and we try to accommodate and work around and like morph this idea out of this mutual like inspirations or aspirations.
Yeah, I think instead of working for a client with a project, we'd rather work for a project with our clients. Yeah. That makes a really big difference.
Okay.
We become partners in the creative process.
Right.
Sometimes.
Well, that's really cool. So I tend to digress a little bit, but let's get back to the to your story. Yeah. So tell me more about the project specifically.
The project, the spiral project. So this is a skyscraper in Manhattan, mm-hmm. and it's in Hudson Boulevard, which is a big area that's all being developed. So it was quite flat at the moment, and now the whole skyline is being filled. But this building is at the end of the High Line, which is a big green space running along. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that this green space carries on up the building and spirals up to the top. And every floor then has a green space, mm-hmm. sort of like an exterior garden atrium space. So that was the basic concept of the building, which is really... they wanted that to carry on, like to keep that concept throughout, and with the development of the building, for that to still be really obvious. So, I mean, in terms of the CGI, for example, is to really emphasize the green, and you've got the green of the High Line and the green spiraling up the building. And then because it's called the spiral, the idea of it, of this green space spiraling up to the top, we wanted to keep that visually, so like a visual idea, like a visual message. So it's kind of high concept in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But the film that we made, so in the talk we were breaking down the combination of how much live action we use, how much CGI, and how much motion graphics.
Mm-hmm.
So we also used quite a bit of motion graphics in that film to describe the concept and sort of show like white, you know, kind of basic colors like white renders with just a green, and also illustrate the idea of the building design, which was kind of like influenced by the illustration style of Hugh Ferris, who you know, illustrated like the zoning laws in Manhattan, which is what influenced the building as well.
Of course.
And the shape of the building. So we got to sort of really merge quite a bit of motion graphics and illustration with live action and Bjarke as the character. And then also the CGI of the building, you know, where it would be in the skyline, like a show off, you know, skyscraper in Manhattan. So right. It was quite a nice kind of combination blend of all those things. But it was very much a film about the architectural concept, more than the people who'd inhabit it, for example.
Mm.
Yeah.
The building itself was the character in the story.
Yeah.
And Bjarke.
Yeah. And what I also like, and you mentioned that you guys use, you know, a lot of motion graphics and other things. You tend to put things in there that are not necessarily very finished, right? They're just a communication tool, right? And that's... There's two things that I notice when I watch some of your work is that it allows you to not take it so seriously. You know what I mean? Where it's more playful in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But that playfulness makes the communication of that design feel more natural and approachable as opposed to some very serious glass box building that's got all this metal and no, and he's like, no. So I got this idea. I mean, just the way you said it, you know, you described the design concept even in an audio format where you can't even see it really well, right? And that's the way you communicate his ideas. That's very specific to him, though. I think that you don't necessarily see a lot of architects that communicate these ideas in that way.
I think a lot of architects do that at the very beginning with other architects. You know, that really typical drawing with a biro on a napkin, you know, and in the end the building is built and the architect goes, look, I designed it at like 4 a.m. in a bar and now they built it.
Yeah.
I think they really like their very, very basic sketches.
But
I don't think they necessarily always, because I guess over time and over a design concept, sometimes the concept gets, you know, tweaked and changed and could get lost. And so I think most architects try to keep that basic idea throughout the whole, you know, thing of the project.
But also,
so it can be hard.
If you present it in a very serious way, it puts like a definite notion to it, you know, like a tone of serious, finished, completed tone to it.
Yes.
And what oftentimes works really well when we do a film or something, is to keep this idea of motion, of things evolving, keep moving.
Right.
And it's like we capture a moment in time sometimes. It's like sometimes we're not approached at the end of the design process, sometimes we approach in the beginning, so we can't really show a completed, finished concept. We want to communicate the idea, but at the same time we want to give it this feeling of moving, of evolving, of changing, of adapting.
Right.
And at the same time, we need to show an end product.
Mm-hmm. So, do you? I mean, I don't know if you do. Well, you could. So,
well, do you have to? Do you need it? Does the client really want to see that or not?
Well, I think that's the thing, right? This is what I'm actually getting at. And, you know, maybe it's a combination of your relationship with someone like Big, but I'm sure that has transferred to other people. But I think that there's a lot of pressure to show this really fine piece of rich, expensive architecture to sell the cost, right? Mm. So it's like, it's a very expensive building, so I'm going to have to show it to be this luxury box, right? And that's what gives it this sense of importance and seriousness and not as approachable, right? And so, you know, because I don't have, you know, $6 million for a condo or whatever it is. I have.
Yeah, well, I think it's worth mentioning that for The Spiral, so we've done this movie which were it was targeting the public general audience, right. But we also made some different content after that. We made a cell suite, we made some stills, we made some 360, and those were treated in a different way. And for some interior stills, like you said, we had to go with something really posh, really clean, really neat, a nice brushed aluminium looking expensive. We had to do that. But that has no place in the movie for the general public. There was really different content.
The films the films more often have a different purpose. It's like we were saying, it's to communicate an idea. So it's not about selling a product.
Right.
Sometimes there are parts of them that do that, but more often than not, it's about the main concept, it's about the main idea, it's about the main value of that project as a project, not in the details, it's not about the nice finish of the table or the expensive desk, because in a way, if you start to do that, you have to deviate from the concept. You have to like stop, have a look at the table up close, you know, and it takes away the attention, it's distracting, it's not helping in communicating one big idea.
Right. I think communicating to a public is really what's important right there, right? But even it's rare to use, let's say, private property and communicating that to the public. Most of the time when people are going to communicate to the public a piece of architecture that is, it's public, right? And it's usually to show off something, right? So you're going to say, oh, I'm going to do an Olympic stadium or something like that. You're going to show it as this, again, very serious tone. But what you're almost doing, it's like, oh, this is a new building that's going on. But you can be part of this process too, right? You know, not sort of allowing the public to feel like they can approach this in some way.
Well, we're actually working on that, and we're actually working on some tools to help the architect on the earlier stages of the design. And it's some tools which has to be collaborative. So I cannot say too much about it because a lot of it is still under NDA. But the point of it is like everyone would be able to participate, propose designs, and everything will go to a huge library and architects can be inspired or picked whatever design. So I think that's really key to bring the public since the earlier stages of the design on board.
Yeah, it is. So where does it get shown and how does the public react to them? Have you gotten reactions towards some of your work?
I mean, not all projects go public in terms of being broadcasted or streamed on social media or something like that, because oftentimes the projects are on the NDA and they're
in, but what in, about in the project you guys what about the project you guys did on the
Hyperloop
the one
I was thinking about the Hyperloop.
The Hyperloop is one of them. The other one I'm thinking about is the one on the on Manhattan, the park that you guys did where you were communicating in Lower Manhattan along the coast.
Oh, yeah, the dry line.
The dry line, yes.
Oh, so that was very much about the public.
Exactly. So that's the, let's talk about that one because that's a great example about the public's interaction with it, right?
So in this case, this is another example of approach to the project that allows for an idea to be born and presented in a way that doesn't necessarily concentrate on details and gives this perception of what is going to feel like to be there, what is going to be the impact of this project on the society. And, for example, all the CG that is in embedded in the film, it just aids that. It just helps to explain it. It's not the main focus. It's blended seamlessly. It's natural. And the people are the focus and the concept is the focus. And this is why it appeals to the general audience, I think, because the general audience doesn't care about the quality, not the quality, but like the details of this shrub that we've placed in the foreground.
Is the bench going to be wood or stone?
If it's done properly, it wouldn't draw attention. It would just sit within the scene and be part of it and bring this element of realism of it will help you imagine yourself being there and it will bring them the element of relatability.
I think the motion graphics in that film also really helped that, because I think it was cool that we were allowed to go so much with the character of the motion graphics and also make it like the kind of film that blends with the other kinds of films that we do. Mm-hmm. So it gave it like a squint character as well as the character of the project, and each person talking, and it kind of showed over kind of like in a very, very like scribbly way, and it was less serious, which made it just nicer to watch and like a little different to other stuff that you see. So it kind of tends to get your attention.
But also it gives a funny and a playful twist to a problem that is very serious and very dramatic. So, and also like the way it affects the people is that you don't want to feel this heaviness of the situation. You want to look out for something that is going to make it better. You have to, be able to enjoy this new idea of what is going to happen next and feel more safe, more playful, in a playful mode.
Because it could have been done very differently.
Yeah.
And it could have been seemed very serious and like an engineering problem.
Yeah. But sometimes the seriousness brings also other issues, because the moment you get very serious with something, you have to be able to back it up completely. You have to be able to answer a lot of questions that maybe are not ready to be answered at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on the stage of the project. If it's very conceptual, architects and us including, we are not ready to answer questions about, you know, the engineering details of something.
Is it
going to work? Is it going to do the job that is suggesting it would do? And if you start being very serious about things, you get into this kind of conversations that are again like deviating from the main idea.
I think it's an issue that a lot of different visualization companies are faced with, is what stage of the design you start, you make your films or images or your visualizations. So if it's near the end and it's very finished, you can make a very finished look to the film, and they often want that. But if it's really early on and they have a concept, so sometimes that's why you go for the angle of mood and emotion and communicating and sort of storytelling, because the actual architecture hasn't really been resolved.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't, as a CGI artist, you actually, you know, everything has to match up. You know, you have to finish stuff. So you end up guessing a lot of things that haven't been resolved yet, because it's an early stage of design. So it's not possible for architects to tell you this goes here, this is how high this wall is, you know. So you have to be a bit more vague. So then you have to bring something else to focus on.
Well, do you think, I mean, it seems obvious, but you're bringing the napkin sketch to video, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the motion graphics. That's what you're adding. That's why it's that playfulness, because the napkin sketch is not serious, right? It's not like a hard line. It's not finished. Yeah. It's just a brush stroke. It's an idea. It's a movement. It's a flow.
And at the same time, this idea could live through the whole project. It could go through numerous iterations of the design. It will survive. If it's a strong idea, then it has its value. And this is where the beauty of it lies, because we can keep the same concept and change the design and make, you know, change this couple of shots later on with the updated design and make everything very polished, very good looking. Or we can keep it playful and rough, but it will still communicate the same idea, and it will be impactful, and it will be fun to watch.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a really, really good idea to do that. How has that style, I mean, that style obviously works well for someone like Big. Has doing that style of narrative or storytelling or filmmaking, more specifically, has that influenced other architects and other designers to communicate in the same way? Do they look at that and go, I can that's the way I want to communicate something?
Well, like a lot of our different clients, I think Big is one example of working with an architect practice themselves, but often our clients are property developers, and so their message is often quite different. It's a bit sort of as a marketing tool. So a different style of like, So instead of that playful, very basic message, sometimes the other angle that we do, I think, because we showed two other projects that were a bit more like inspirational lifestyle marketing. And again, the building project was not at the forefront of the film. So the idea was to show what it would be like to work in this master plan, you know, so you could be part of this community. And by doing that, the angle that we did was to show the characters, and this person is at work in this building, but then later they go down this communal staircase and pass by their neighbors, and then they go and play football in this pitch, and then they get the train home, and all of this is within this master plan. And so again, we don't have to show the building so much, but it's more on the characters. But often I think developers, they're less inclined to be playful like that because they're a bit more serious. So instead, we go for like mood and emotion and feeling, and this is often like audio is a big part of that as
well.
So it's like that's another kind of style, but I mean it's another approach that we do where this, like, you know, the design stage is still early.
Right.
It's another way we do it.
I remember one crazy movie, maybe, you know, you want to talk about, there was a movie you directed with this massive theme park. And all the movie is built like you start in the city and then you have a cart on the, you have some toys on the street and you're like, it has nothing to do here. And then more and more, you get more stuff flying on the sky.
Oh, yeah. Not sure I'm allowed to talk about the project in detail, but yeah, I mean.
Sorry, don't then.
No. I will mention it briefly.
Well, but basically, we were approached.
Yeah, we were asked to do a film about a theme park. We had a couple of weeks, and they wanted some live action, and they wanted this, and they wanted that. They wanted to show the development, and we felt like it was too much if we start concentrating on each part and be really serious about it and try to analyze it. It was just overwhelming, and we would never finish in time for the need of this film. To be presented, we came up with the idea to basically look at it from a child's point of view, like what if I was a child going to this theme park, and basically the whole film became a dream of the child that was imagining things in his bedroom and playing with toys, and then everything became real and started building around him, and there were other children coming from all different parts of the city, and they all came together in this place, and they kind of like realized their dreams in this setting. And it was crazy and fun to work.
I still can't believe we got a sign off on this storyboard.
Yeah, it was it was a strange one.
But what you're doing is you've created a story of a person, right? And through you're using that person as a vessel to actually communicate about space. That's really interesting too, because I think that we're so used to seeing narrative about someone's story, right? Through films or documentaries or whatever. They all tell a story of someone, right? That's something that's very familiar to someone that's watching things. If someone watches a film of a piece of architecture with no one in it, or someone just walking by, but you have no relation to that person, where they just become, it's not approachable, right? It's not something you feel like you have to relate to someone in that story.
Yeah, we try to push to have live action and green screen and actors, because first of all, like technically we're not there yet to be able to do that with 3D people, CG characters. Yeah. They don't look good, they don't convey emotion, we can't ask them to do what
they
need them
except
to
do. It costs a lot of money to do that.
Still it won't be the same.
And that's not worth it.
So but, we try to incorporate this element as much as possible. And for example, in the Taiko Place project that they presented, the architecture became the backdrop for these characters to evolve and to grow in throughout the film and to fulfill their ideas and dreams and experience the place. And yet, as 3D artists, for us, it's also important that even though it's a backdrop, it needs to be a convincing backdrop.
Right.
So even though something might be like blurred out in the background, hazy, there was a lot of effort that went into these CG shots to make them believable. And yeah, it's like we all serve to to the concept, you know.
Right.
We try to bring all elements together just to bring the concept to life. So
it's just amazing, you know. It's just amazing to me compared to where I was, you know, years ago when I was doing ArcViz stuff, where it was basically when people wanted to do an animation of architecture, they would, you know, make a path through the building and do 1,000 frames and just walk through it.
Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, I've done that 10 years ago.
I know. They were terrible. But I do remember it was after I'd graduated from Rice, and there was a group of guys who were, two guys who were presenting some architecture students that were doing things. And they had figured out a very rudimentary way of doing some kind of a green screen thing, right? And they did a very simple animation, but they told the story of this library they're designing, and they had people kind of walking in green screen, and they had a story going through it. And this was an architecture school back in 1998.
Wow.
Right? So really long time, what, 20 years ago? No.
More.
No, wait, we're two times. Yeah, 20 years ago. 20 years ago. And they were doing, it was a really cool idea, and they had some music to it and all this stuff, and people were like, oh my God, what is this? And it nowadays, people are doing more of that, but they're not necessarily making as, the characters are there kind of telling a story, sort of loosely following. They're still trying to focus a lot on the architecture. These guys are taking more risks in terms of making the characters more of a central figure, I think, where you're actually trying to tell like the story of the kid and all of that, where the background becomes the inspiration and you can see it.
I think we have to be very flexible and keep an open mind on how we can visualize requests from the client perspective or ideas. And sometimes we are able to keep our precious creative baby intact and still accommodate clients' requests, which are oftentimes related to show more. Let's have a massive aerial here with fireworks,
right.
And blah, 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 blah. We need to see how all the need to see how all the building works and show all the floors, explode them, have like labels showing spaces. So that's why our films are often a combination between motion graphics and live action and CGI, because each one of these elements can serve a slightly different purpose. They can all work together.
I know it must be very hard to communicate with marketing people, people who may not know about filmmaking, right? If you communicated this to a director or someone else who wanted some architecture piece, they would understand, right? But if you look, for example, we look at Blade Runner 2049, right? There's beautiful establishing shots of architecture that are part of the narrative, right?
Yeah.
And you can, you know, that's one way that you could communicate. It's like, well, establishing shots can communicate your design really well, but still be part of a greater narrative.
Yeah. I think there's a really great skill in trying to convince clients or like working with clients, but convincing them of an idea that they didn't necessarily think that they, you know, that they might want. So often I think people who are marketing building projects and developers, they have this checkboxes that they just know that you know, they always need.
Mm-hmm.
We need to show a big wide angle from the corner of the room. We need to show a big aerial that shows everything, because this is probably the tick. It's probably essential for marketing because people do want to see that stuff. But I think our job is to say, okay, we can show that stuff, but really what you want to do is focus on this other thing, because that's why your film will stand out and it won't look like every other marketing film. So I think that there's sometimes, you know, the relationship, when it goes really well, they understand, right, you know, we'll go with your creative idea because it's going to take us somewhere different than what we thought. But this is a relationship that, you know, can work.
That is really our added value to the project. That's really the narrative, the creative. We are not just like CAD monkeys. Some people like to say that, CAD monkeys. If you absolutely know what you want and you want, like Michel say, your camera at this angle of the room, wide angle, then we don't really have anything like to add to that. We are not really the proper guy to call for that. There is so many companies that can do exactly that
right.
for cheaper than us. So if you call us, it's really to bring something else, something more.
I think that's true. And I'm sorry, I'm going to mention another company that does that. But for example, if you look at the stuff that Mir does, right? Mm-hmm. Mir does amazing work. And some oftentimes they're like, this is an amazing, there's a still or sometimes videos. But sometimes they barely see the building.
I think they're a really good example of someone who's able to
establish a style and stick with
it. To convince, sort of clients come to them for a mere image.
Right.
And I think that they've established themselves well enough that they're able to do that. And that's really amazing, because then they get to make a mere image, with all of the drama that they want without having to go with, the typical marketing, check boxes. I think they've done that really well.
I think in that respect, we are quite different in terms of we are really flexible and also a bit more curious. Like, we'd like to experiment with different styles, sure. with different ideas, with different approaches to problems. And also we'd like the process of problem solving in collaboration with our clients. Like, I don't know if that's clear enough, but
where are the founders of the company from? The Squint Opera.
They're British.
They're British, right? Yeah. So if you, the Brits have a really great sense of humor and can be lighthearted sometimes, right? Yeah. I'm not necessarily saying that Norwegians don't.
Come on, Michelle, make a joke.
I don't necessarily say that the Norwegians don't have that, but I'm saying that they have a different way of looking at life. And I think that you can see that in their style, right? And I think you can see some of that part of the English culture that comes through in some of your videos.
Yeah, we try to keep the peculiar element, the weird element, the curious element, the surprising element, and it's part of the Squint identity, and I don't think we should give it up for something else because we like it.
Vicious baby.
Also, I wanted to bring up this idea that basically, to me, it looks like the whole problem with fly-throughs and all these boring cameras, essentially, maybe it will be solved once the VR technology is strong and industry is strong enough to be able to tackle this problem. So maybe in the future we won't need to do any more fly-throughs, because there will be other tools allowing people to experience the spaces firsthand. Yeah. And then this will free up actually a lot of artists and companies creatively to do other things.
Yeah.
And concentrate
I want to get into that, because that's important. But I'm glad you brought up VR, because that came up. That's something that I've discussed in terms of the narrative approach, right? Films are a linear third-person experience. You are a person experiencing a story that's being told to you. That's a third-person experience, right? Right? And VR is a first-person experience, right? What I find interesting, I always mentioned this before, and why I think architecture is the most important thing to consider when you're doing VR, is that architects tell a first-person experience. When they're describing a piece of architecture, they are putting you into that piece of architecture. You're being told a story, so it's kind of third-person, but it's a non-linear first person, and they can tell you, in this experience. And so VR conveys that message that the architect is doing in a lot of ways. But you are telling a different story that's a linear story and a third person experience, which is also very valuable. If all movies are that way. So people like to see things like that. And all of, we've always been told stories and they're always linear. So do you feel that VR is supplementing what you're doing and you want to do it differently, or are you guys actually creating VR content as well?
Yeah, we're creating. So we've done a few VR projects mostly we've been testing out what we can do creatively and how we can make something that's so the idea of narrative is a little different in VR, but it's really been done in video games.
Sure.
And trying to bring the element of your experience from the way that games do, so to make you curious. So, I mean, So when you're inside a space,
I like the way you said. I've been trying to find a way to communicate. Make you curious is a great way to describe it. Yeah,
it's a fundamental human being.
Part of
us.
Because if you just put someone in a VR experience and they have no reason to go somewhere or do something,
So we already trying to follow the same steps, like we try to stay true to squint nature,
right.
And we don't just try to push the quality, we also try to bring narrative and add more, add funny elements, add curiosity and surprise and all these things.
Something really cool that our creative director told me when we were doing our last project was if you can get the marketing guy, the really serious marketing guy in the suit, on the floor looking underneath the table, then you've won, because you've got them really getting involved.
Yeah.
And so the idea was to sort of, when you're making a scene or you're making experience, try, if you can get enough interesting stuff to make you look around it, then you're really, because then you're looking at it from all angles and you know, and then you've seen the architecture, you feel like you're there. So rather than just looking around, if you move your head around, you duck under the table.
So what tools do you use to make people curious?
So, I mean, one example we did was to have like some books in a shelf at the bottom. So that makes you look underneath. Or we had like, so this is stuff that we've been developing and researching more, but like ways to transition within spaces might be to sort of pick up an object, and then the next time you're in like a new space, you're looking for that object automatically. We sort of tested this out, and it turns out that, you know, you have to tell somebody, pick up this object, and then the next time they just start looking for that object. So then they start walking around, and that object might be on the floor, it might be near the balcony, so then you walk to the balcony. And we also try to use sound a little bit as well, like
sound cues to show direction, right?
So depending on where the VR experience is shown, if it's in like in a sales suite, for example, it's in a fixed place, and you can set up 360 speakers. You can have like a bee buzzing, you know, behind you, or you can have a car out that window and to grab your attention. This is stuff that like it kind of needs a lot of UI test, like a UX kind of testing, to see whether it works. But it's coming from the angle of games a little bit.
You create missions for the people. You send them on missions and reward them at the end
without trying to sort of shoot everywhere around your building.
You guide them through. You create experience for them. So in a way, it's also something that you impose on the person experiencing this, but at the same time, you know, it comes out of his own natural reactions in a way as well.
Well, I don't know how many of you guys play video games, but I don't play that many, but I did get really into Skyrim for a long time, right? And Skyrim is more of a sandbox game, right? It's not a linear narrative where you have to go to the next step and the next step. So you just kind of explore the place, and then you like something happened and it takes you on a path of a story, but then you can diverge and go to another story or do this another story, right? And I spent 480 hours in Skyrim.
Like, that's really normal for that game.
That's why at some point there was a drop in the podcast release.
The game is really like amazing. And then what's also interesting is I talk to other people who play the game and they have a completely different experience, right? Mm-hmm. So it's almost as if you could create the curiosity and someone does something and then someone else does something different. It's like, did you see this? No. And then they want to go back into that environment and explore what the other person may have experienced.
Yeah, in a way you want to have multiple narratives and let them intertwine and let the people just take different routes, and they ultimately will be led to different experiences.
Right.
So I used to work in video games in the sandbox kind of game. And as an artist, it's super fun to put your own stuff in there. It's a little bit like Easter eggs. And I think that we were doing that with the VR as well. So for example, we had like computer screens in an office, and then, you know, so what kind of books did we have there? You know, first it was sort of serious books, and then we thought, you know, maybe this person who's working in like a financial office is like really interested in, you know, country homes or like fine wine, you know, and kind of like
Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I love that.
Because this is actually, I mean, talking about narrative, it's like another way to tell the story. Like you're in someone's space,
right?
And you have to discover this person's personality. If you have the opportunity to do that, it's all in the detail, and it's a little bit like the sandbox game because right. you put tons of detail in there and let the player roam around.
Just don't make it a murder mystery.
Yeah. Yeah. No guns. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, a gun under the chest. Quickly get it.
Yeah, actually, yeah. There is one game. It's called The Hunter. It's on Steam, so unfortunately, there is guns on that.
Yeah.
But so you're in the forest and then you see an animal and you have to chase him and it can take hours, but that will lead you to different landscape.
Right.
And you can really spend hours, and unfortunately at the end you have to kill the animal, obviously. Okay. Or maybe that, you don't, up to you.
Yeah, but I mean, I think there is, you're right. I mean, following that plan is great. You came from video games, you know exactly the kind of challenges and the way that you can deal with those things. Did you guys ever see the IKEA VR thing?
Yeah.
Of course you did,
yeah.
Right? It's very famous. And it's really cool and it's playful. What I love is the meatballs, right? Yeah. You can just put there and you can start cooking meatballs in the kitchen, like as opposed to just looking at the kitchen, yeah. Like, okay, there's an IKEA kitchen. It's like, no, I'm going to cook some meatballs. You know?
Actually, something really similar, what Ina was saying about the film where you're from the point of view of a child,
yeah.
The IKEA thing where you could choose to be the cat in the kitchen. And so you see everything from, it's amazing because you'd never otherwise be able to experience that.
I know.
Not really.
Again, yeah.
Shame.
Yeah.
I always wanted to be a cat.
I've said it before, but to me, it blew me away to see that because the first time I was able to be a child inside of, you know, the space.
Mm-hmm.
And then I very quickly became extremely forgiving of my young son who's trying to pour milk into his cereal on the counter. And I realized like, oh yeah, you know, that would be really hard right now to try to pour milk at that height with my hand over my head. I was like, okay, yeah. So I get it. I think it's really cool to experience things in different scales and different ideas and different ways of looking at things.
So. Yeah, I mean, VR is really exciting. For us, that's a whole new playground.
Right.
And we still have a lot to experiment. And we are like kids with a new toy. We want to try everything.
Well, I think all of your films look like your kids having fun. You know what I mean? And it's not necessary. Not necessary. And I think that's really cool because that becomes much more approachable and much more fun to do that. I want to tell me a little bit about the Hyperloop project. What can you tell me about that?
So yeah, Ina directed it. She's going to talk about it.
I co-directed it with Nick Taylor, who is the executive creative director.
Right.
Well, it was great fun to work on that one. That's it.
Okay.
No, it was really exciting because it's such a contemporary, crazy, futuristic thing. And technology speaking, you know, we were really excited to be able to be part of that.
Let me say that I love like this guy Elon Musk who started this Hyperloop company. This guy is like one of my heroes, and I was really excited to be part of this really the future. That's really the future.
Yeah.
I do believe it's going to happen really soon.
But you know
what's
amazing about him, and if he ever, you know, my when I can finally say that I've achieved the ultimate in the podcast is if I have him on. But what I think is amazing about him is the fact that the Hyperloop thing was just him at a party saying, you know, high-speed rail is BS, and I bet you I could come up with a system that's way more efficient.
Mm-hmm. But I don't have time to do it, so here is a drawing for free.
Yeah.
If anyone wants to pick it up, do
but
it.
But he does this all the time. Like, he goes out there and he's like, all right, I'm going to make an electric car company just to prove to people that it can be done. And now everyone's competing with him. He's like, great. Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
No more gas cars.
Yeah.
I think this Hyperloop technology is really gonna set up a whole new barrier in terms of transportation, which is gonna be the limit to the resistance of the body to acceleration. I think this will be the maximum amount of acceleration the body can handle. Hence,
it doesn't have to be though. You can do a slow acceleration. Is ultimately when you get to speed.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
It gets
so
to speed
you
really,
will
really
have,
quickly.
You exactly, but so you will
like
have
in seconds.
You will have to accelerate slowly, then you will be full speed and decelerate.
Right.
But basically, that's gonna be you won't be able to go faster than that, and that's already within a few hours. You're gonna be on the other side of the planet.
Right.
So literally, that will set up the limit of...
The sky is the limit.
What I also, yeah, of course, you never know, but at least for a few decades.
What I also think it's interesting is the fact that he thinks about it as, because he's from a IT or software guy, he thinks of the no longer as trains, but he thinks of them as packets on a network, right? Mm. Yeah. So yeah. Like you go to, it's not a long car where everyone goes to the same destination. You have to wait at the station. You just like poop, 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 yeah, wherever you go. And so yeah, like the stations are routers.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like networking.
It's a network.
It's like architect designing a
computer
network.
Yeah.
For us, it was also exciting that moment that, you know, he's a dreamer and he does everything in his power to fulfill his dreams.
Right.
He's giving them away, he's sharing them with the world, and they do come true or in the process of coming true.
Right.
And this is something that we kind of like enjoyed as a idea, as an approach to the world in general, and we kind of like relate to it and we really enjoyed being part of something that is the future and is in, you know, a stage of a dream. So
right,
we participate in someone else's dream and help making it true or coming closer to becoming true.
We have to mention Big as well, because we've been introduced to that by Big.
Right.
Actually, the Big were designing
the stations.
The stations.
Okay. There's
a lot of Hyperloop companies doing that. And it's great that everyone's getting involved, including Big, to try to say, hey, we're going to design part of something and make part
this
of that.
This is a perfect example of what we discussed earlier about communicating an idea, because in fact the stations, the design was still in a conceptual phase. Mm-hmm. The pod itself is going to be given to an engineering company to be designed properly. Of course, Big cannot design a super fast train, and or maybe they can, but it's a different story.
Yeah.
So all the elements were there in their very infant stage, like very early baby stage, and we still had to produce the film, we still had to communicate the idea, we still had to have something to show visually for people to relate to and to accept and to celebrate. So this is a good example of us putting together all these different elements and giving them character, giving them value within the film and building this idea and sharing it with the world.
But I think, you know, when you brought up Elon Musk and all the things that he does, and I have a huge admiration for him. A lot of people think, you know, Steve Jobs is incredible. But the fact is that I don't think, you know, Steve Jobs is not giving the iPhone away for free, right? He never, right? He'll sue anyone who even matches anything like that. And I know that he was a great visionary in terms of where he thought computers were going to go. But Elon is thinking way more about the future of things and way more about
long term.
But what he's also doing is he is finding ways of getting people involved in the design process of his dreams that are not necessarily in their comfort zone, right? Like designing a pod is not necessarily something that you think of an architect to do, right? And so those are good involvements. I'm only going to get a industrial designer to design this. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was really glad to see that on this conference you have HP running this competition
to
design the city on Mars. That's really great. People are really getting involved. Brings the interest.
But because ideas come from everywhere and from everyone, and for them to become a real object or a real product, it takes other things, but not necessarily for the idea to exist in this idea. It still has its value and it could be taken further by the people who know how to take it further.
And give it
to engineers, exactly.
I think it's really
clever. This was really exciting within this project as well.
I think it's really clever also for him to open it up to other people and not to keep it to himself. Because I think it's quite brave, but it's also like a really smart move. It's a bit like open sourcing. You know?
Yeah, because you multiply the potential.
Exactly.
When people put out like, we have the Tesla killer, or the new electric car that's going to be better, and goes, great, mission accomplished, you know?
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of the future, isn't it? To share, to collaborate, to open platforms, sharing assets.
Yeah,
working
a little bit. I think so. I think there is. It's the way I like to think about it.
I think it's really true. At least in our industry, we have regular meetings with all the other 3D artists, I have the feeling maybe sales guy compete, but 3D artists, even between different companies, we are all sharing ideas, sharing our work.
Sure. Like we're doing here right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. For instance, well, like the industry is quite young still, so we are like kids playing with tools and discovering new things and coming up with workflows and ideas about how to do things better, and it's all exciting. So we should work together to improve, I think, rather than close up in a box and suffer alone with the
problems. Absolutely, absolutely. That's what I do in my job is in labs, is specifically to communicate with people and getting people to communicate with each other and share ideas and do other things. Mm. So that's my job.
Yeah. And you must see the best, because especially you must see great new emerging artists and stuff showing new different, using the same tools in new ways. It's really exciting. It's exciting for people who've also been using tools for a bit, for a long time to see them being done in a different way and to be able to go, oh cool, let's try that, not to stay the same way that you're working all the time, but to evolve your own
it's not just about tools. The tools are great, but it's about the artist and the style as well, right? And your work is a very unique style and amazing and really cool and not necessarily copied that much, because it's, you guys have your style, you've got something that's really cool. I mean, eventually people will try to copy it, but they will not succeed. But for example, he was really good, but Ian Spriggs is an incredible artist, right? And he does amazing work, and he is something that does, he has his own style, but you know what, his tools are actually very simple. He's like, he just does it by hand. It's just a lot of work,
He's just very good at that.
Yeah, he's very good.
Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah, really amazing.
We're almost out of time on this one, but I wanted to just in closing, if you mentioned a little bit, what have been your thoughts about the conference, and have you guys had good time? Was good opportunities for you or?
Yeah, it was great. Actually, it was great. Really big thanks to Chaos Group. Really, they've been amazing for us. We've been in touch for the first time a few months ago with them.
Yeah.
And they really helped us to organize a conference, our slot. They were really, really, really amazing.
Yeah,
so big thanks to Maya and Boriana.
Yeah.
They were amazing.
Good. I'm glad you guys were able
I've seen some really nice talks, actually. It's been really cool to see people present, because they've had a good hour or sometimes just half an hour, but it's a nice amount of time for people to show. And they've been quite a variety of different kind of work.
Right.
So you get to go and see kind of different stuff.
Right.
Yeah, I managed to meet some of my hero when I started doing 3D. I was really impressed by Marek Denko.
Oh, Marek, yeah.
And
yeah,
I was
super
good just to share a glass of wine with the guy. That's great.
I thought the Herzog and de Meuron presentation was amazing.
Yeah.
I think that they know a lot about what they're doing, and really cool that they sort of shared a lot of it with us.
For me, it was great to see the progress, because I was at the D2 conference 2 years ago, I think, when they showed part of this presentation, and it was just part of it. And now it was the continuation.
It's more fleshed out.
Yeah, yeah, more fleshed out, more clear. They've improved. And it was great to see that. Just the process.
I was lucky enough to go to Switzerland and go to their office, and I spent about almost a full day at their office hanging out, having lunch, and just seeing all the things they do there. And I think it's really cool. They did a really great job over there, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, good.
Round of applause.
We have applause. That was Tram, who was just finishing up her master class on the Nino project, so it was really cool.
Oh, this one was amazing.
Yeah.
Mind blowing.
That's a lot of modeling.
I felt like I wanted to bow in front of them.
Yeah. And they were really, really great. Well, thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate you coming by. I appreciate
speakers
here. I'm going to hang out with you and chatting with you. I'm glad your presentation worked out. We had a few technical issues.
Yeah, big thanks to Fabio for that. He was a lifesaver yesterday around midnight.
Grabbing Fabio away from the bar to help her transfer files.
Fabio's an amazing person.
Yeah.
All right, thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, bye.